Our next case for argument this morning is Malin against MTD Products.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Re- I'm sorry.
We'll have both sides to find a seat.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Mr. Rasek.
My readiness overwhelms me. Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Rasek. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiffs' appellants, Don and Sharon Malin. Obviously, as Your Honors are aware, this is the case involving the Moore product manufactured by MTD and sold by Home Depot. The district court granted summary judgment to the defendants on the grounds that Mr. Malin was the sole proximate cause of his injury. The very device that was intended to prevent this kind of accident failed because it was not connected and because it was not properly designed, in that if it failed, it still allowed the product to function so that the danger remained in the product. Despite that, the court found that it was all Don's fault in the accident. And our question is, how could that be? How can we have a situation where we have what appears to be an obviously defective and unreasonably dangerous product, and yet the court finds that only the plaintiff's conduct was the proximate cause of the injury?
In your client's deposition, he was asked the question, was there an initial point in time when the blade made contact with your foot and then the blade stopped? And he answered no. He said the entire event happened within a very short time period. So even if that OPC had been connected, would it have made a difference? When you look at when it engages, which is up to 5 seconds?
The ANSI standard, which says you have to stop the blade within 5 seconds.
Right.
Actually, that was not a grounds at all for the district court's decision. As far as I know, it wasn't
We know that, but okay. The judgment can be affirmed on any grounds that's been presented.
And the reason I say that, if that was a point that had been raised at length, I suspect that we would have changed the expert's approach to this testimony in order to do a sort of a reenactment to determine exactly how this accident occurred in the time frame involved. But if you read that part of Mr. Malin's testimony closely, he says he does not know. He says it was a short time. Counsel tried to get him to say it was within the clap of a hand. Don kept saying, no, I don't know. Finally, I believe the question was...
The expert said... when it was connected by the expert later, it stopped the blade within 2.6 seconds.
Correct.
It's 5 seconds. That's the industry standard.
Correct. Yeah.
Let me tell you the problem here. The plaintiff has the burden of production and persuasion on every issue in the case.
Yes, sir.
And one of those issues is causation.
Yes, sir.
So if the only evidence of record is the statement, I don't know how much time there is, I don't see how your client can win, because there's no evidence of causation.
But he gave more than I don't know the time. He gave what he did and how the accident happened. He said he is not certain how much time it took, as would almost anybody be who had been in any kind of an accident, unless on staff.
Think about how long it would take to replicate. And it's from the physical description, it sounded like a second or less. You step off and your foot turns and is under the blade, right?
And if
that's going to be under 2.5 and well under 5. Now, maybe that's wrong.
If the defense can sell that to the jury, they'll win.
No. The defense doesn't have any burden.
And we do. We just have to show it's possible that the blade would have stopped within the time that Don described.
No, that's not what you have to show. You have to show that had the lawnmower been properly designed,
correct,
and of course the trade group's definition of proper design is stop in 5 seconds,
correct,
there would have been no accident.
And
that's what worries me about this record. I can't see any evidence that this accident occurred in more than 5 seconds. It took more than 5 seconds.
If Your Honor will recall, and trying to complete the answer to Judge Williams' question, When Don was being asked to admit, was it within a clap of the hands? Was it within 2 seconds? I believe Mr. Mallon's testimony is the time between the time his foot hit the ground and went under the blade was about 2 seconds. But that's not the governing time. The time frame with the OPC switch, as soon as his posterior comes off the seat. So you have, if I can recreate, I don't have the mower here. If I had thought this was going that way, I might have asked permission to stand up on this. You saw the pictures, Your Honor. It's a very little tiny mower. And get 1 foot off and figure out how to start moving and get your other foot off. It does not necessarily have to happen with under 5 seconds. And I believe that when you read his actions of what he did and how he did it, a jury from that could draw the conclusion that, in fact, he would have gotten both beyond 2.6 seconds, which was the actual stopping time, and beyond 5 seconds, which is the ANSI-mandated time. Testimony that said it's impossible, and that would be harder for me to overcome.
So let me ask you another question. Is it your position that whether the consumer disregards the clear warnings, and there were like crystal clear warnings here, that's irrelevant in a design defect case?
It's an issue that would go, it's not irrelevant because it would be an issue that the defense would try to raise at trial in terms of assumption of the risk, which is not what the district court judge based his decision on. I mean, if I was the defense counsel, I would make this an assumption of the risk. Because assumption of the risk in Illinois is a subjective test, and what the operator knew would go into the equation, and they would say, well, you read these warnings. But my suggestion to the court is that the warnings are not all that clear. They say that he should have taken the key off, but their own people say, and our experts say, this mower was not designed. It was not intended to be shut down every time you got off it for a few minutes. If you depress the parking brake and you don't leave the engagement pedal inadvertently locked, you'll be fine. The mower will sit there, the mower will run, and the blade will not be spinning. And you can get off and do whatever you need to do. Pick up the baseball that you found in the grass, wait for somebody to walk out of your way, or do what he did. So in terms of the warnings, that should only be a factor in terms of his conduct. And when you're looking at what proximate cause is, and I understand Judge Easterbrook's point that causation is a separate issue from proximate cause. If I can get back to the basis for the district court's decision was proximate cause, he said we were the sole proximate cause. My argument is simply that you can't look at sole proximate cause in a vacuum. You can't look at just one side of the equation. If you look at only one party's conduct, that party's conduct is probably always going to be the sole proximate cause. But when you balance that against the two-pronged problem with this machine, that it obviously wasn't connected, that the safety device wasn't connected, and that it was not designed in what has been called a fail-safe mode, which it's not clear from reading the defense brief, but I assume the court appreciates that fail-safe simply means that when a machine's component fails, it leaves the machine not functioning because there's a risk that the safety device isn't working, and if the safety device is not working, then you should not be able to use the machine. But I need to, obviously the court's concerned with the causation issue. If I could, if that had been something.
Yeah, because I just want to make sure I got the sequence right. He left the mower in forward gear with the engine running and the blades engaged. Right?
That's the point where I parked.
And he didn't check to see if the blades were spinning.
You can't. That's the part where if I could disagree with something that the district court judge, that's where the district court judge got it wrong. He did not know that the blades were engaged. He'd been using this mower for 3 years, and he specifically testified, when I got up, when I leave this mower, and I let the blade engagement pedal, which is a separate pedal, when I let the blade engagement pedal come up, I release it. It comes up, and when the blade engagement pedal comes up, that means the blades are not engaged.
Had he ever driven it up on a curb before?
No, there's no evidence that this specific thing had happened before. But there's evidence that he'd gotten off it before, and you would because the leaf catcher is underneath the seat, so you have to get up and lift up the seat.
And when it's up on a curb, then it's not level anymore. I just have a hard time understanding why that wouldn't be a signal to you that, boy, don't get close to these blades, up on a curb.
Because he said quite reasonably that the blades were not spinning. In his experience, the blades were not operating. Because every time he used this machine and let the the blade pedal, the blade engagement pedal go, it came up. If it comes up, the blades are fine. What happened apparently this time, which is what we had to concede, is that this blade engagement pedal, when it hits the bottom, if you hit your heel just right, you can lock it down. And this must be the one time that he inadvertently, that's what Dan Pacheco, the expert, said, this is the one time he inadvertently locked the blade engagement pedal down. Now, what Your Honor is talking about is, if you're not sure, I think both Judge Evans and Judge Williams, if you're not sure, why would you take the chance? That goes to comparative negligence, and that's not an issue in a product liability case in Illinois. Just assumption of the risk is. He believed quite reasonably that the blade was not spinning. And if he believes it's not spinning, the machine's safe. Nor did he intend, obviously, to fall. You know, what happened was an accident. This is, and I would presume it's foreseeable to the manufacturer. I don't think they're arguing that it's not foreseeable that somebody wouldn't fall or slip underneath that. That's why this device is here. Let's assume he was willing to take the risk. That's a stupid thing to do. That's still why you have the stop device on the product, because we know
why
that people do.
Why is it unreasonable for the manufacturer to assume that, that somebody using this will not fall?
I think I almost take that because people fall when they do things. I mean, is it so unusual that he would? And my bigger point that we made in the brief, it's not a question of predicting the specific harm. The manufacturer has a duty to put this device on if any harm at all is foreseeable. And that's why they have the device.
This particular machine, though, was made in 1998.
Purchased in 2001.
A used machine by
2001.
Your client for $400. What was the original price of it?
I don't know. It's not in the record, to my knowledge.
So do we know when that safety device in this six-year period, when it was used by a prior owner, when it was used purchased by him, and 3 years later when the accident happened, when that safety device became disengaged?
No, we do not. But the point is, we do know the important thing. It was not working when he bought it from Home Depot. So the answer to that question could only save MTD from liability, not Home Depot. There's no evidence, there's nothing to suggest that it came off afterwards. And that would only save MTD even on one of the two charges. The other charge is that it wasn't designed properly. If it was designed safely, if it broke, it wouldn't operate. That condition was there when MTD sold it. It was sold without a fail-safe design, and Mr. Pacheco said that is not good engineering practice. So that no matter when it happened, we always have the prong against MTD that they didn't design it in a fail-safe mode. Unless Your Honors have further questions at this point, I've entered my rebuttal time, and I would like to save that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ratzak. Mr. Robinson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold, so if I lose it, I apologize. I think the questioning illustrated that there are a number of different ways that summary judgment can be reached in this case. We can look at it as a proximate cause issue. We could look at it as Judge Evans asked, a whodunit issue as to whether there's evidence of who disconnected the OPC. We could look at it as a legal issue as to what is foreseeable and what is not foreseeable as a matter of law. We could even look at this under a risk utility analysis justification. At the end of the day, it's a Rule 56 case, and the question is, does the evidence meet the allegations? Under proximate cause, for example, was the plaintiff's conduct the cause of the accident, or is there some fault attributable to either the retailer or the manufacturer? Under the design defect case, was there a feasible design that would have prevented the accident? Under a manufacturing defect, was there something that was done on this particular mower that wasn't according to the design?
Sounds like you're identifying disputed issues of material fact.
I'm identifying the legal issue, Your Honor, and I think
legal issues, whether a particular design is feasible, whether there was a manufacturing defect and so on, are factual questions, not legal ones.
Well,
let me give you the kind of problem that popped into my mind. somebody drives a car carelessly and runs smack into a bridge abutment and is very seriously injured because he's been exceeding the speed limit. He's perhaps drunk while driving, right? But the airbag doesn't go off because it was never wired up. Do you think one could have a claim against the manufacturer of the car?
As I understand the crashworthiness doctrine in Illinois, that's exactly what...
The answer is yes in Illinois. And I don't understand why things are differently just because it's a riding lawnmower rather than a car. The function of these safety devices is to protect against people who behave unreasonably or carelessly or outrageously.
Sure.
Right? And so the observation here that the plaintiff knew he shouldn't get off the lawnmower and just had a brain seizure doesn't sound like a response to what I understand Illinois law to provide.
Well, to meld your facts with this case, somebody would have had to actually physically cut out the airbag to make this similar to the OPC.
No, cut out the airbag. I gave you in my hypothetical exactly the problem. The sensor, which senses the deceleration of the car, is never wired up to the rest of the airbag system.
Okay.
And so nothing happens when it hits the abutment. Well, here, the sensor was not wired up to the rest of the system, and nothing happened when he lifted off the seat. I don't understand why these are different in principle. And if you answer my auto question the way you did, it sounds like you've given up the district judge's rationale here.
Well, if you want to talk about the district judge's rationale, the district judge essentially said if an owner disregards warnings,
yeah, exactly.
Warnings.
And in my car case, there is no doubt, if you look in the manual for the car, it says, don't drive into abutments while you're drunk. It says, don't drive while drunk. It says, don't exceed the speed limit. And cars are not designed to be driven into abutments. That's not a normal use of a car.
Sure.
Right? But you agree that Illinois law nonetheless requires the airbag system to work because it's designed to deal with people who behave stupidly and foolishly. And so here we have a plaintiff who behaved foolishly, but it looks like state law requires the safety precautions still to work.
I also understand that Illinois law, including the restatement, says that a manufacturer is entitled to rely upon that a user will read and follow its
so
warnings.
So then you have to answer my abutment case the opposite way. You have to say it's fine if the airbag doesn't go off because the manufacturer is entitled to believe that there will be no drunk drivers of its cars. Well, of course, a manufacturer who believes that would soon be bankrupt. Oh, sorry, they all are bankrupt. Anyway, you see the problem.
I get the gist.
If you accept in the auto case that kind of defense, then the crashworthiness doctrine is gone. So I don't understand why that kind of defense would be accepted in a lawnmower case.
Well, I apologize because I initially misunderstood the question about the sensor, but that really gets down to the key issue, which is the design of this particular OPC in question. And the question that has been raised by plaintiff is, why was it designed that way so it could be disabled? And there's a very clear answer in the record. It was purposely designed so that if it was disabled, the least amount of harm would be done. One of the bases that I talked about where summary judgment is possible, and this district court didn't even look at this, was under a risk utility analysis. If you design a product in such a way so that if harm comes to it, it's as best it can be under that scenario. Yes, the OPC was disconnected by somebody, somewhere, somehow. We don't know the answer to that. But the rest of the safety features on the mowers remained working. So under that risk utility analysis, this was a choice by the manufacturer. When you're talking about foreseeability, and this is an easy concept to mix with is it what's possible or even what's probable. Foreseeability has a legal aspect to it. And is it foreseeable that consumers will disregard warnings? Well, in the layman's sense, sure, people do things all the time. I've defended a case where somebody drove a mower off of a roof. We don't need to put parachutes in our mowers. You know, yes, it's possible, but is it, as a matter of law, foreseeable so much so that a manufacturer has a legal responsibility to somehow prevent that?
Well, if that operator presence control switch had been functioning the right way, you know, would it have saved his foot?
Your Honor, I don't believe that there's enough evidence on the record to establish that. The only evidence, as the Court earlier pointed out, was that this accident happened in a very quick time. The new OPC, the 6290945 unit, as opposed to Mr. Malin's OPC, is equally capable of being bypassed, equally capable. So if someone were to intend upon disabling this, they wouldn't stop until the OPC didn't work. The old unit and the new unit are equally capable of being bypassed. So if it's bypassed under the old system or bypassed under the new system, the result is the same. And then getting to your point about what's on the record in terms of how much time elapses between, you know, Mr. Malin getting off of the mower and the cut, there's virtually no distinction. In fact, there's nothing developed on the record.
Counsel, I'm puzzled by this business about can the system be bypassed.
Sure.
Plaintiff's theory, as I understand it, is not that some malicious person disconnected the wires.
Sure.
Theory is that there was a manufacturing defect and they were never connected in the first place. And it's clear that the design that plaintiff favors is one that is resistant to manufacturing defects in a way that the actual design is not. But I don't understand what role this mystery malicious person plays.
If there was evidence of a manufacturing defect, I would not be talking about the mystery person. The only evidence on the record of a manufacturing defect is the lack of evidence. An expert by plaintiff who suggested he did not see witness marks. He never testified to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty what that means. He refused to say on the record that there was a manufacturing defect or lend an opinion to that. And a jury just simply cannot reach that conclusion based upon lay testimony or speculation or counsel's arguments, which is all at this point is on the record as far as whether there was or wasn't a manufacturing defect. So that's why I'm talking about the mysterious everyman who disconnected. We don't know, and quite frankly, as long as it wasn't, you know, my client, it's not important to the resolution of this case. If there were evidence, we would be addressing that evidence. But we're talking about this is a bypass case. The evidence only points you in that direction. It's not a somehow the OPC came disconnected, slipped off. These OPCs are designed so that they lock into place. I don't know if there is or isn't on the record a picture of the OPC, but there's a hole in it that connects it in place so it doesn't slip off. It's not a slip-off case. Every single one of these units are tested at the end of the line. It's not a difficult test, Your Honors, to sit on the mower, get off the mower. Either it's running or it's not at that point. This isn't, you know, hooking up wires and all sorts of computers to a mower. You know, it's a very clear distinction between whether there is or there isn't one at the end of the line. So as we're looking at it, what happened coming out of MTD, there's very little that plaintiff can point to and say, well, there's enough for a jury to find MTD did wrong here, either design-wise or manufacturing-wise. Then we're looking at 6 years between the incident and between the accident itself. And I think, and I'll I have some time for Home Depot's counsel.
Thank you, counsel. So
thank you very much.
Mr. McCory.
Yes, thank you very much. The issue that the court found for summary judgment for the defendants was sole proximate cause. The court analyzed the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff and found the plaintiff was the sole proximate cause. Now, the defendants met their burden of showing that there was no that they were entitled to summary judgment and no genuine issue material fact as to sole proximate cause, in which then the burden switched to the plaintiff to bring up evidence showing there is a genuine issue of material fact, which the plaintiff actually failed to do because they did not actually directly address the defendant's sole proximate cause argument in their motion, in their response to the motion for summary judgment. And there are two very important undisputed facts in this matter showing that the plaintiff was the sole proximate cause. One, as has already been discussed, were the crystal clear warnings on the mower saying, before you get off the mower, put it in neutral, put the parking brake on, and turn off the engine. These were here for the entire 3 1/4 years the plaintiff owned the mower.
Counsel, you heard my automobile question to your to Mr. Robinson. What do you think? If the auto manufacturer puts it in the manual, don't drive while drunk, and of course it's also a crime to drive while drunk.
Yes.
You think that means the manufacturer faces no liability if the airbag fails?
Well, under that situation, there might be a question as to that, but in hearing your hypothetical, I thought of a hypothetical of my own, a TV show that
if you would answer my question before you decide to make up your own questions.
My apologies. There is, obviously, it is not unexpected for a car manufacturer to that somebody will drive drunk in their car. Perhaps the airbag being unattached might go to the severity of the injuries, but the plaintiff is still the cause of the accident in driving drunk and driving into the abutment. The airbag has nothing to do with whether he drives into that or not, only what happens afterwards. So that would be my answer to your hypothetical.
I don't think that's an answer. Is the manufacturer liable or not?
I would, under that scenario, I would say no, because it goes to the extent.
I think Illinois law is
damages.
Yeah, Illinois law is very clear on that point. The manufacturer is liable, but in a comparative negligence system, the manufacturer won't have to pay full damages. But your position seems to be, as you said, that the manufacturer is just not liable. It pays zero in that case. Because your position here is that the manufacturer and seller pay zero, even if there is a design or manufacturing defect that contributed to the accident.
That is correct in this situation, because the situation is slightly different from the hypothetical that you have set forth, because Mr. Rasek said at the beginning of his one is that this OPC is a safety mechanism to turn the blades off. But there was another safety device that could have prevented the accident, the off switch. All Mr. Malin had to do before he got off was turn the engine off.
Just think about the auto example again. All the drunk has to do is turn the key in the car to off, and then its forward motion is zero, and he doesn't hit the abutment.
Yes, that is correct. But again, with the airbag, that just goes to the injuries that he suffers afterwards and not to the actual cause. The cause of that incident is the drunk driving and the presumably losing control of the vehicle. What I had mentioned earlier is in thinking of a similar situation having to do with the lawnmower. I recently was watching the TV show Mad Men. I don't know if any of your honors watch that, but it takes place in a fictional advertising agency in New York. And during one of the episodes, an advertising executive brings a riding lawnmower into the office from one of their clients. And then a few days later, they're having a party to celebrate a new boss coming in, and they break out the riding lawnmower for fun and start driving it around the office. And they've been drinking for a while. And then one of the secretaries gets onto the mower and starts driving and runs over the new boss's foot. Now, presumably, currently, some enterprising plaintiff's attorney would say, well, there was a design defect because it was too high, the blades were too wide, there were such other issues, there should have been warnings, there should have been a switch where you can run it inside, where the answer actually to defending that case is that they should not have been running it inside. Without running the mower inside, that accident never would have happened. And that's the same situation here. Without Mr. Mallon failing to turn off the mower, the accident would not have happened. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Rasek?
Thank you, Your Honors. If I can go back to how the accident happened, especially to address Judge Williams' comment. Keep in mind that this accident was not a simple slip, fall, and foot underneath. It actually had two components, two stages when he fell. His boot actually, because he had a work boot on, apparently stopped the blade from spinning, and he could hear the engine whining. And it was then that as he tried to pull his foot out that the blade began to spin, thus suggesting, at least to a jury, that the time between the time he got up off the seat and the time the injury actually occurred to his foot was a significant amount of time. The argument that defense makes that the time of the disconnect is unknown and that's critical, the problem with that argument is it does not affect the fail-safe deficiency that we described to the court in the situation. And the only other point that I had to make was that Mr. Pacheco made it plain that at page 166 of his deposition that leaving the engine running was okay, at least in his expert opinion. It's the blade operation that's the key. Mr. Mallon did not know that blade was spinning, nor would he have been able to know because you can't hear it over the motor and you can't see it because it's inside. Would it have been wiser to turn it off? Maybe, but that's, again, that goes back to assumption of a risk, not whether or not their product was defective and whether we can prove it caused the injury. Unless the court has some further questions, we obviously ask for a reversal.
Thank you, Mr. Ratz.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.